Hello and welcome to Blockchain Gaming World, episode 146. I am your host, John Jordan, and joining me today we have David Johansson, who is the CEO of MetaKing Studios, best known for Blocklords. How's it going, David?
Hey, John, I'm good. Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
So as we tend to do, always good to get a bit of background to the person who's on the podcast for this episode. And you've been around in games for a while, so I think you've got a little bit to talk about. But yeah, it's good. Without going into too much detail, I suppose, but give us a bit of an arc of what you were doing, how you got into games, and now how you sort of, put one of the early studios into Web3. So some of the thinking behind that.
Yeah, so I've been in gaming essentially for the last decade. I'm from Sweden. That's where I'm based these days. And actually didn't start my career in gaming. I started my career in film. So worked, studied in the US, went to film school there, worked in Hollywood a few years, kind of loved that whole creation process, and worked with a number of production companies where I was really helping with packaging, financing, and distributing indie films, but like higher end indie films. So that was a great start to the career. Ended up in China kind of randomly. And in China is where I started working in gaming. This is 2013, 2014, really when free-to-play gaming's taking off, especially in the West, right? It'd been a thing in Asia for a few years by then, but that's when it really started taking off on Facebook, in mobile. And yeah, I mean, once I got in, you know, and I'd always been a gamer. So once I got into the gaming industry, I just kind of never left it. And it was, for me, it was a perfect use of my creative and producing talents that I'd gotten in film. And then mixed with the interactive and the tech elements of games, which are just challenging, but also a lot of fun. Basically traveled all over China, worked on a number of projects. Some did really well. Some were canceled early, you know, as the game industry goes. And as we were building, we were really building free-to-play economies. And I was spending a lot of time creating digital, you know, world and ecosystems where people were spending a lot of hours, a lot of time, and actually a lot of money, right? Because you'd get these users spending $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, $50,000, you know, on a Facebook game. And I would also see the negative side of that, which is, you know, the boss would decide, oh, here, all the resources you paid for are now worth nothing, right? And we've focused everything on this resource or that thing. And just didn't quite sit right with me. And this is before I discovered crypto, but I was like, okay, well, it's kind of not right. Like, we're creating these worlds, people are spending all this time in it, and then the user really has no say or no equity or, you know, no ownership of the ecosystem that they're spending so much time and effort in. And that's when I discovered essentially Bitcoin, 2017. A friend told me, hey, look at this. And I just kind of went down the rabbit hole. And basically right away, I knew, okay, gaming and crypto or Web3, you know, which it wasn't called back then, is the future. Because I was seeing, you know, from my gaming background, I was seeing all these users who had really a deep understanding of economics and of how to create, you know, live living worlds, which economy is a huge part of that, right? Like, having a good economy is a big part of having a real digital ecosystem. And then you had the Web3, or, you know, the crypto crowd, which was fun, which was really highly active on socials, which was, you know, when and I'm sure you felt the same when I got into the crypto world, you were really kind of blown away with the community, with the memes, with the intensity of it all, right? And so, yeah, so essentially in 20, I convinced my co-founder, Nikki, like, hey, let's look at blockchain as a way to really make the kind of games we want to make. And right away we saw, oh, there's not, there, the tech isn't really there. And this is before NFTs were even invented, right? So it's like, how are we actually going to make it work? Is it just going to be a payment system? Are the games themselves going to become blockchains? Like, how is this all going to work? Then CryptoKitties came out. NFTs were invented, and that was like the perfect use case to just get started easily, you know, and like, okay, this is an easy way to integrate crypto or blockchain into your game. And that was in 2018, and really it's been a crazy race since then.
Absolutely. I do find it interesting that it does, not in every sort of case, but for a lot of people, because that was sort of my background, was looking at the free-to-play mobile space, and looking at those sort of economies, and that was sort of quite interesting from 2012, seeing how these things just sort of exploded as no one sort of realized. But people who were working in that space, I think, found it easier to sort of realize what blockchain was giving sort of players and how that was sort of like the next, I think that seemed a very logical next step for people who were involved in that sort of world, whereas I think lots of the sort of negativity around that has sort of come from the more sort of, you know, premium type people who have just didn't make, you know, they're sort of several steps behind where game economies, a lot of the game, or pretty much all the money in game economies are in now, you know, have moved to. So it's sort of interesting. And I think that's when I first came across BlockClaws, I think probably 2019, and you were one of the, I mean, there were quite a lot of projects out there, but I think even back then you guys sort of stood out as, you know, people who sort of knew what they were doing as much as anyone did in as much as any of us knew in those days. And so, you know, this, you know, you're now into sort of early access, but it's been, you know, a long time. You've worked on this game for, you know, many, many years. So do you want to talk a little bit, you know, from my point of view, as someone who sort of, you know, followed you and played bits of it, it seems sort of broadly the same sort of concept, sort of, you know, medieval sort of strategy resource sort of game. Has it changed that much? You know, what was the initial idea that this was going to be a good game to work as a blockchain game?
Yeah, I mean, it's gone through a lot of iterations, and obviously it looks very different now than it did then. But yeah, at the core, it is a very similar idea. Mm. So I think, I don't know what came first, if it was the name BlockLords or the concept of the game. It's hard to say. It was probably, sometimes when you have ideas, you know, it's all at the same time. So it was definitely something like that. But yeah, the concept of BlockLords, and this is back in 2017 when we had the original idea, but it was really you create a lord or a lady. It was only lords back then, but we've expanded to ladies now as well. You create a hero. This hero will have items. All of those items will be created on chain. You conquer strongholds, which give you resources that you can use to craft those items. You trade in cities, and you can conquer cities. And if you own a city, you will earn taxes from trades made in that city. So it was a very simple concept at first. And when we started, so the first prototype we made was 2018. That was on Neo. That was when we won the Neo game competition that they had. So that was like essentially our seed funding.
So back then, Neo was like every blockchain had to have its little phrase. So Neo was the Chinese Ethereum, I think. Was that the one? I can't remember.
Yeah. The Chinese Ethereum. And they were called Anchors before. And they did, I mean, it was a very difficult chain to work with. They were essentially... They were conceptualized kind of before Ethereum really took off. So it was still using UTXO tech, became really clunky when we were launching smart contracts. Yeah, so it just wasn't built for smart contracts the same way Ethereum is. And so it made it really, really difficult to work with. But we were the first NFT project to actually launch on it. That's something that we've always made sure, like when we've collaborated with a chain, and obviously we've worked with many protocols in the last 5 years, but we've always made sure to launch and to get users and to see how it actually works. And that's also how we've discovered a lot of issues with different types of protocols and blockchains. But yeah, essentially what was interesting then is everything was on chain, right? So every action was a transaction, whether it was, you know, creating the hero, whether it was doing a battle, whether it was crafting an item, everything was on chain. And we quickly realized that was not a very user-friendly way of doing things. Because very early, you know, in 2019, that was when we launched the first version, like a public version of BlockLords. And we launched on Tron and we launched on Neo. And we saw that it was just such a huge hurdle for the user to get them to make a wallet, you know, to install, not install the game, but to actually, you know, store their seeds safely safely, to get on an exchange and actually buy the asset and then send it. So, you know, even though we felt the game was good enough to get a few thousand users back then, we could maximum get like 200, you know. But what we realized is those users were extremely active, giving great feedback. They were spending a lot because every transaction, you know, was a gas fee and an extra fee. So it was over monetized, overly complicated. But the users who were actually there were extremely active. And I think this is something we've seen in blockchain for all those years, right? It's like the community, when it comes in, is actually very active and very opinionated and gives a lot of feedback, you know, for better and worse. You do get a lot of feedback from the user. Something that you don't really get maybe in Web 2 is like it's easier to be ignored or just, nobody downloads it or nobody interacts with it and it's a little harder to iterate. Long story short, because I do ramble on a bit. exactly. We launched a version in 2019. We saw that there were a lot of problems with making blockchain games. It was an infrastructure. It was the user onboarding. It was how to get the fund, how to access the funds. And, you know, there's a lot more infrastructure built now for that, even though we're still quite far from where we need to go, I think. But back then it was just nothing. And we would have to write documentation for the people we worked with. We'd have to figure out a lot of issues that as game developers, we really shouldn't have to figure out, meaning we were spending way more time on infrastructure, on financial security, you know, on things like that, rather than on the game itself, meaning that the game suffered a bit. We weren't able to make the game as good as we wanted because we were spending so much time on infra. And that's why in 2020, we were about the second version of Block Lords by then. We decided, hey, let's put Block Lords on pause and let's really work on infra and let's build scalable infrastructure that we can use so that Web3 can actually reach new heights, right? Or actually drive in millions of users, not just a few hundreds or a few thousands. And that's when we started Seascape Network. And Seascape was really all about let's build the infrastructure that we need so that we can make the game that we want to make. And that's when we got our first funding. Binance ended up being the lead in Seascape. We launched a lot of different projects. We launched a lot of proof of concept games where we were really taking this concept of mass minted user demand NFTs at scale, right? And overall, that was a great learning journey. And we had almost 1 million NFTs minted. We worked on cross chain, many different chains. And then, you know, 2020 happened, 2021 happened, everyone went crazy, play-to-earn gaming became a thing, you know, gaming and blockchain became kind of what we thought it would become. And yeah, everybody was asking me, what happened to Block Lords? You know, what's going on with Block Lords? Like, we want to play Block Lords. And that's when we were able to really set up the structure of MetaKing Studios, hire a new team for that, like form a new team from the ground up. And then we did decide, let's go back to the game we always wanted to make.
A few things I'll pick up there. I mean, if people are interested, if you go to my YouTube channel, there is the original 2D version of Block Lords that I played on Tron. So I think that's one of the few games I played worked out to play on Tron. But nice. Even then, it sort of stood out. You know, it was a sort of 2D moving around type game. But you can sort of see you could sort of get a feel of where this was going to go. But obviously, you know, when you're resetting in 2021 and you're setting a new team. You know, that previous version was a 2D browser-based game and you sort of, you know, the scope gets much bigger. So at the moment, you know, you're a 3D PC game. Was that, obviously, you kind of felt that was the fidelity you sort of wanted to relaunch it? What was the thinking around that?
Yeah, so, I mean, there's a few parts for that. First is I do think even in Web 2, like in Web 2 gaming, there is a gap in the market for these types of strategy games. Like obviously Total War has, you know, dominated the strategy RTS field for a long time. Here in Stockholm, we have Paradox who made Crusader Kings. I actually worked a bit on Crusader Kings 3 on the content for that. So these are the types of games I've always wanted to make and that I love making. And that I think there is a real strong user base for these types of games and they're a bit underserved. And they're very underserved for like higher quality levels is what I feel. It's kind of like the Netflix conundrum, right? Like you have this whole audience, like Netflix streaming really took off because they had this whole audience of 30 plus, you know, people who wanted these thrillers type movies and they weren't being made anymore because Hollywood was only making, you know, comic book movies. And so it's a similar approach. I think there's Total War audiences, they've been waiting for the next new Total War for 20 years. And it's not really coming because Total War, you know, Creative Assembly themselves, they're not really incentivized to change their formula. And it's just too expensive to make a new engine. And there's a lot of issues with the current Total War structures that aren't being revamped. Same with Crusader Kings and Paradox. They have a great game on their hand, but for them, it doesn't make sense to add battles to it because that would become too difficult. And then on the mobile side, you have games like Game of War. That were extremely successful, right? Like I think 4 or 5 billions in gross revenue, I think they had. And they were one of the first, you know, SLG strategy games on mobile. But same there, it lacks a bit of depth. There's no real battles. It's all about, you know, clicking and building things, but they don't add that thing. And so for me, what the game I wanted to see, even before Web3, before any of that, was an MMO game that has strategy element, that has those real epic battles, but where you essentially start off as a farmer and you can work your way up to become a warrior or a ruler or eventually a king, right? If you're at the top of the ladder. And that's essentially the opportunity that I see in the market with this type, you know, triple A, double A, you know, it's hard to mention. I would probably more on the double A side, but at least aspiring to be triple A quality of graphics. But I think creating an MMO world, and I guess we can go a bit deeper into economy later, but where the graphics and the world and the environment feels at top quality, driven with, you know, Web3 incentives so that you can create actually a sustainable economy. That to me was a dream, you know, and I was surprised because I knew we would get some traction when we started announcing, you know, sharing block lords with investors and people we knew. But the response from investors and from the community and from people ended up being much, much stronger than I thought. So it was kind of like, okay, well, let's put together MetaKing. Let's see what happens. And then because the response was so strong, we were able to up the ante and make the graphics better and better and expand the game, basically.
And I guess from what you're talking about, you know, the focus of sort of the vision was PC, but obviously it's, you know, it has sort of idle mechanics. So there's sort of a, you know, for me, maybe coming from the mobile side, I thought, you know, you could sort of see a mobile version. Maybe you can't because of the way you want to sort of run it, but but it has, it sort of also has those sort of elements as well. So, I mean, would there, is it PC purely, could you want it to be PC or, you know, is mobile in there in the mix or?
Definitely mobile's in the mix. We decided to go with PC first, A, because we wanted to look as good as possible for this first version. And also with the PC version, because there aren't, the competition isn't as crazy in PC for free-to-play games. Obviously, there are a lot of free-to-play games. But, you know, if you go to mobile and you launch a free-to-play game, it's very easy to be ignored. It's the same problem, right, that you have in Web 2, right? That's a problem in gaming. Where you launch it, and unless you have a massive advertising budget, essentially nobody's going to play it. In PC, it's actually a little easier. And now we can see, now that we're on Epic Games Store, and then hopefully we're aiming to be on Steam at some point, it is actually quite easy to get download at reasonable, you know, CPI prices. So we wanted to start with PC because we wanted to make it look epic, because there is, an underserved crowd of gamers from, you know, Total War and Crusader Kings. And those are users who are used to spend, you know, hundreds or even thousands at some, in some cases, dollars on their games. But here we would be able to offer a strong competitor for free. So that was essentially the idea. But yes, like you say, there are a lot of mobile mechanics in there, especially now for the farming. And that's essentially because we're trying to create, you know, this farming element of the game, which again comes into the economy, which we can talk about a little later, where we can drive in a lot of users, get them farming, get them spending a lot of time inside of the game. And then really the next phase is adding the battles. And that's what I'm always saying is like the battles element is extremely important. And that's what's coming next. But that's essentially where the farmers are going to have to either consume resources or sell their resources to other players. And, you know, that's when the fun starts, essentially, when battles come.
In terms of, I've been playing the early access version that's available through the App Store. So I actually played on the original community, as a community demo, and then been playing the sort of a more formal release. And as you say, it is, you know, it's very much focused on the sort of the farming, and it's, you know, it's not a genre that I have deep experience in, but you can sort of see what's going on. There's basically sort of stuff going on all the time that you're sort of having to manage. And then there's sort of, you know, as you get more resources and more sort of units, there's quite a lot of things you're sort of, you know, buildings need repairing all the time. Then you're leveling up the buildings and you can sort of see, you know, you sort of see the progression. At the moment it's sort of, not really, I mean, there are NFTs in there, but it's sort of very light, and you don't, even if you have NFTs, it's not really much of a sort of benefit at the moment. So how do you sort of see that in terms of, you know, this is obviously the very sort of first playable version, and there's a bunch of other sort of in-game features like the battles. But how do you see the sort of the NFT sort of side of that, and how over time do you sort of want to move the needle on that?
Yeah, so definitely we've had a light touch on the way the NFTs are integrated right now. And that is, again, for the user onboarding, right? Like, we want it to be very easy for a user to download the game, start playing the game. They actually do get a free hero now, so I'm not sure if you got that one, but you had some old heroes as well, I know. And essentially, that hero can be minted onto a chain at any point. There's not a whole lot of reasons to do that for now, but at least the pipeline is there if you want to do it. Adding utility and power to the heroes is something that we're really looking at seriously right now. When we started designing them last year, you know, when we released the first few, we did a free mint at first, then we did a few paid mints. And the idea is to get as many of them out there as possible and to have different ages, different stats, different traits. All of those don't impact the gameplay as they impact a little bit, you know, like for the farming elements, but they don't impact as much as we want. Yeah, very small. So that's something we're looking at quite deeply right now is giving them more significant boosts. But again, this is very tricky because if we make them too powerful, it becomes, you know, purely pay to win, which we also don't want. We don't want the people who have NFTs to just not play the game. So that's something that we're taking very seriously. Some features coming up that are going to be quite useful for where heroes are going to be quite useful are the squad progression system, where essentially the squads you're recruiting are going to be upgraded. Mm-hmm. And if you upgrade them in tandem with certain type of heroes, you're going to be able to go down different paths with your heroes. Then we're adding the stronghold battles. And the stronghold battles is where you will actually create armies with your squads and heroes and go attack, you know, raider camps, different types of fortresses, different types of... this is all against AI, but there will be, you know, some resource sharing mechanics. And this is where heroes really start coming through, right? Where certain traits will unlock certain skills. These skills can be used during the battles. There will be all sorts of little things we can add. And then the real piece will be when the dynasty system comes out. And the dynasty system, you will essentially be able to start a house, you know, a family house, you know, House Jordan, for example. And House Jordan will have its own symbol. It'll have its own stat boost. And that's when you can start marrying heroes with each other, have kids through the generations, and essentially build out your own little dynasty. So essentially for the heroes themselves, over time, we're going to add a lot more utility. And our philosophy is more like, let's get all the systems built out and then add power rather than overpower it right now. And then we can't really go back from it.
Yeah, you definitely don't want to be taking stuff away from people.
Exactly.
Giving stuff to players is always good. Taking stuff away.
Yeah.
generally.
Exactly. And so, and for the blockchain part, essentially what we're doing now is a very light touch. Like your hero can be bought on a marketplace. You know, we support Immutable, we support Polygon. We have planned to support a few more in the future. You can import your hero to the game. You can withdraw your hero to the game. And the idea is your hero is really stands for your achievements and your power in game. And we're going to be adding a lot of systems to reflect that, especially in 2024. But essentially what we can do also, and this is something I see for the game, is now the game is quite easy to download. It's quite easy for us to get users. And we're still testing a lot of things for that. And there's a lot of things we can improve in order to, you know, get more users and to keep them in the game longer. But essentially our philosophy is let's get the users into the game. Let's get them, you know, enjoying the game. Let's get them playing the game as long as possible. And then we can start offering different in-game rewards, whether it be, you know, just resources, whether it be, you know, maybe later tokens, NFTs, and they get those rewards for figuring out the blockchain part. And of course we can hold them hand, you know, we can kind of walk them through the entire process. And this is where I think, you know, the game could really shine as a user acquisition tool for Web3 as a whole. It's like get gamers playing the game, get them staying in the game, and then, oh, here's Web3, here's what you can do, here's what you can't do, and try it out, and we'll give you some in-game rewards that you want anyways.
Because at the moment, you have sort of the main reason to sort of be playing it is there's a reasonably solid sort of battle pass system that you're sort of running campaigns, and although I do notice, having failed, they've definitely failed on the community beta, and looking at how much I've got to do to get the, because the main point of the battle pass is you get a sort of new sort of NFT, and you've set the bar quite high there for engagement. If you want to get those NFTs, so you really have to be playing the game a lot. So I don't think I'm gonna
commit.
But that's sort of interesting, you know, as you say, this is a sort of a game. The farming thing has, you know, you have loads of resources. You have the basic sort of wooden stone, and then food, and then there's, you know, then you sort of use those basic ones to build up other things, like you have dressed wooden and all that sort of stuff. You don't see any point in having that stuff on chain. That's just sort of like a soft currency. That's sort of like those are resources in the game, but there's no advantage in putting those things on chain in terms of resources, because it's just too much sort of complexity.
There's definitely an advantage to putting it on chain. I think we're more taking a step-by-step approach. We're more cautious because we've experimented a lot, right? We've tried a lot of different things in this space, and if we were to put everything on chain too soon, it would kind of create this irreversible economy in a way, and it would make things really, really difficult for us. So again, this is really like more, we're seeing this as an experiment, as a big experiment. And, you know, our plan with Blockverse is to create this giant MMO-like economy, something like EVE Online, World of Warcraft, RuneCraft, RuneScape, right? And we can't rush it. Like, if we were to put everything on chain now, I can tell you, I mean, our community tells us quite often about the problems of our economy. And we listen, you know, and we are working on it. It's just going to take the time it takes. I would love to have a system where everything's on chain. Every resource is its own little resource. Every resource is tradable for token. It can be monetized some way. And also can be used like in the real world, right? Where every resource is either consumed or it's sold, you know? And we are working on a few solutions. So there, one is the game design caution, right? Like, if we do this wrong and it's on chain, there's really not a lot of ways to take it back. So that's one reason. And even as centralized resources, as those game resources are right now, there's a lot of balancing to do when it comes to pricing. We have a PVE marketplace that I know you've tried. We're working, actually the first thing right now is not even about the economy. We're working on the UX for that and UI to make it a lot easier to trade across regions. But also right now it's almost too easy to trade across regions, right? So we're working on the costs, how much, what does it cost to actually travel to another thing? And that's the thing, when you're creating this really complicated economy with 12 different resources from scratch, we want to make sure we have it. We're never going to have it completely right. We're always going to have to adjust, and we're always going to have to pull different types of levers as game designers. But we want to make sure that we feel comfortable with the setup we have and what each resource's place is before we actually put those on chain. Now, once they are on chain, that's when it gets interesting of like, okay, can you actually trade all the resources in a free market type setting? Something like what EVE Online has, right? And again, this is something where we're very cautious. That is the dream, right? Is to have a completely free market where every resource can be acquired for any, you know, whatever the market decides the price. But again, here it comes to balancing, right? Like, how are those resources given out? How are the systems? How do the systems make sense? So yeah, long story short is we do see a future where all of the resources are on chain, but it's going to take a long time to decide exactly how that looks and what it feels like for the players.
I guess the baseline is you need all the game features to be live for quite a long time to begin with. You need all the battles and see how it's just going as an off-chain economy. Yeah. And then you've got 12 resources. You can't put them all together. So you have to choose which ones you go with first and sort of working your way to save.
Exactly.
Sort of many years. Sort of.
And that is... That's definitely our main priority for the coming 2 years is finding a lot of ways for people to spend their resources and obviously optimizing the market as much as possible. And then I think we can start looking at... So one more point I want to make is it's easy to do, you know, this is game design, right? It's easy to do like a premium currency for a certain type of resource. But where it gets really complicated is any type of currency for any type of resource. If that makes sense. So that's the one that we're the most cautious with.
No, you're in a sort of exponential exploding problem that getting one of those resource balances wrong in the game design just blows up everything else up, isn't it? I mean, if it's a one-on-one, then you can feel like a bit more, you know what you're doing.
Yeah. And then there's the very, you know, blockchain. I mean, it's a problem in Web2 games as well, but the really huge problem is, you know, botting and fake accounts and exploitative, you know, behavior from players, which is, you know, to be expected. And there are a lot of ways to fight against it. But it really is on another scale in Web3. And that's also something we have to study. We're like, okay, how do we make sure that either the richest players aren't benefiting from everything or that the bots aren't benefiting from everything. And that's really the key problem that we think about the most is like, how can we make sure that it's not too one-sided for any type of player?
One sort of aspect we haven't touched on yet, which is sort of live, I imagine, I guess, not in the fullest sense, is you do have... you have a very small amount, maybe about a dozen, maybe two dozen of the actual Lord and Lady characters that you've sold, and those are unique NFTs with actually quite funny backstories. I don't know who wrote those, but they're quite peculiar sort of characters. And the point of owning those, I think the cheapest ones you sold were about $1,000, and some were a lot more than that. And the point of those is those are rulers of a sort of land area. So as a farmer, I'll choose a region to be a farmer in, and then there'll be a Lord or Lady who runs that. And then they sort of set taxes and you know, a few more sort of meta sort of management style things. So obviously that's a very small part of your user base at the moment. But how's the feedback been going on those? Because I guess those are some of your, you know, most fervent sort of fans.
Yeah, these are the hardcore players, and they're playing a lot. We definitely have a lot of work ahead of us to make, you know, like we want to make heroes more valuable or useful in game. Definitely the lords are something that we're going to have to spend a lot of time making as powerful as possible. Essentially, the way we want to build it is that, and then we've seen that happen also in the community, is that when a ruler claims a region, they're really incentivized to get as many farmers as possible farming in their lands, right? And so that we've already seen happening in the communities. There's a lot of recruitment going on. There's one lord in particular, Arthur, the Art, who's like he already has 700 users in his land. And so that's the first step is really once you become a ruler, you are incentivized to get as many people as possible into your region, right? And how do you do that? Well, you can do that by building different types of buildings in your region. So for now, we have the library building, which was very costly in terms of resources to build and took several weeks to build. So that's actually been done now. We have the city hall, which can be upgraded, and the city hall will allow you to change your taxes more in a bigger and wider range, and also to enact buffs that affect your region, right? And so that's the idea, is really that once a ruler takes over, they start collecting taxes. The taxes go to the city coffer. The lord can actually claim some rewards from the city coffers every day, but that kind of lowers your order and prosperity. Over time, we want the lords and the ladies to actually upgrade and improve their regions as much as possible, enact as many policies that give buffs as possible, and essentially compete for players, right? And over time, that's going to grow even more with more ways to get resources for the region. And also eventually there's wars, right? And that's when you start attacking and stealing stuff from other people. And that's really when the real fun begins. So for the lords and ladies right now, it really is about being patient with us and playing the game. And definitely there's going to be a lot of incentives for lords. But I do want to be clear that it doesn't work if it's only incentives and it's only, you know, rewards for lords. Actually, I imagine that all of our active, very active, hardcore users are going to be lords and ladies at some point, but they are going to have to fight and compete with each other, right? So it's not, and this is, I've been pretty clear about this from the beginning. This is not a game where everybody's going to be happy and everybody's going to win all the time. It's not like a solid play to earn game that way. It really is. You're going to have to compete and you're going to have to be really strong to stay on top.
Well, I guess that's the main learning, I guess you would say, from the sort of the whole sort of free-to-play era is, you know, unless you have an infinite amount of money coming into the system, not everyone can extract the money from it. I mean, there's some basic sort of balance going on there that, you know, money has to be going into a system for people to be able to take it out. And I guess the next thing we're learning now is, you know, blockchains are useful because resources and value can flow around players in a much more equitable manner. But equally, there still has to be sort of people who are playing the game or involved in the game for more than just the financial aspect of it. That value in blockchain games is not financially, it's obviously a key part of it, but that's not the only thing. So the fact that there's only how many lords you're going to have in the game, the fact there's only, so let's say, there's only going to be 100.
50 then, is the max. Right now we have 50, although it will then go up with time.
If you really want one, then you're going to have to, you know, you sort of have to put the work in to get there. It's not an unlimited thing. And I think that's sort of the interesting thing that we're sort of seeing these deeper game designs and deeper game experiences like Block Lords start to, you know, no one's got close to sort of really figuring out how those things work, but we're starting to see the bottom up building of what we expect to be like your decade long type, you know, like you say, EVE Online, you know, that didn't happen overnight.
Yeah. And that's really the core of what we want to build with Block Lords. It was really that was our thesis, right? And then when we set up the new in 2021 Medicking Studios and we started pitching it around, it was, okay, play-to-earn games are broken because you can't create an ecosystem where people just come in, extract value, sell that value, and then continue doing it, rinse and repeat, you know, and at best, maybe they spent a little money on your NFT at first, but then it just goes circular. That doesn't work. So with Block Lords, it's really about, okay, there is a number of players who want to spend a lot of time, or even bots in the worst case, though we're fighting bots as much as we can, and they just want to spend a lot of time, extract whatever they can. Okay, cool. Those are the farmers, you know, and that's why when you play the farming gameplay, it's a lot of clicking, and that is very intentional. We don't want to automate it because we don't want it to be, oh, I'm farming or this is all happening automatically. No, you got to actively do everything when you're farming, and you got to play smart to get as much as you can out of it. that they're the core of the economy. They're the foundation of the economy. Then what we're adding now on top of that is the fighting element. The fighting is the fun. It's the high risk, high reward stuff, right? Where you go to do this crazy raid, but if you lose your army, well, you got to go back to grinding, right? You got to go back to do the grind, or maybe you can spend something and kind of shorten that grind a bit and go back to doing what you love, which is fighting, right? And at the top, we have the rulers, the lords, and eventually the kings. But for them, it's not just one. It's not just about the earning. Some of them will only be in for the earning, and that's fine. But they're gonna have to play very smart, and it's not guaranteed at all. But they can earn if they do it right. But mostly, it's going to be about status, you know. And in free-to-play games, that is what people pay for. It is status, to be powerful, to be a guild leader, or to have the coolest skins and art, right? That is what they're paying for at the end of the day.
Cool. Good overview of where things are going in general. Can we be a bit more specific? Maybe the next sort of 6 months, what should we be looking out for?
Yeah, so 6 months, definitely we're working on right now the squad progression system. So if you've been playing, so you see in the economy, there's a lot of demand for wood and stone and those types of resources. There's not a ton of demand for food resources. So economy-wise, that's a big focus of ours. And the squad progression system will allow you to upgrade your squads, get a bit more out of your squads, eventually form battle squads, but that will consume a lot of food. So that'll be that's a very big system that's coming up. Stronghold battles, and that's coming towards the end of the year, maybe early next year, kind of depends.
Sooner than I thought.
Yeah, and so it's pretty soon. Yeah, and actually farm PvE battles. We've been announcing it for a while, It is coming out in the upcoming month. So as you're farming, after you've unlocked Sector 3, so which is pretty late in the game, you will get attacked by bears, you will get attacked by raiders, and you'll have to defend. There will be some rewards attached, but mostly it's about breaking the monotony, which can be a bit boring after you've farmed for a few sector. Other than that, the dynasty system is a huge one. We're going to be launching that step by step. But yeah, you'll be able to form your houses. You'll be able to have kids, get married. Yeah, that's a huge system as well. Very important for the Web3 element. That's probably coming out early next year. And we're looking at a couple chain integrations. I can't say which ones yet, but definitely users is the core focus and reaching as many users as possible. And yeah, I mean, you know, we're not announcing it officially yet. So this is maybe some alpha for your guys, but there is going to be, you know, a token drop eventually for the Lord's token, which is the block.
I've always seen that in the top right hand corner. There's a little thing that just says Lord's very easily.
That's right. So, yeah. That's right. So that's coming. That's coming. We obviously want to make it as nice as possible. And that is the benefit of having the game live, right? Like now the game's live.
Yeah.
We're doing some advertising testing where we're refining the economy. When the time is right, there will be a launch of that. Early users will be, you know, rewarded for that. So that is also a good way to say thank you essentially for the players who are spending a lot of time and a lot of effort in helping us make a better game. So I'd say that's basically it for the next 6 months, but that's already a lot of work. yeah.
Cool. Good. Excellent. Well, we'll have to come back at the end of 6 months and see if I've managed to complete a battle pass by that stage.
Yeah, let's do it. Well, to be fair, I didn't mention that point, but yeah, we started really hard with the community beta pass and the preseason pass. It will get easier with time. So for season one, which we're aiming for in December, so that'll be a nice run the holiday season. It will be a bit easier. Obviously, there'll be some higher level tasks you can do for better rewards. But yeah, it is going to get easier with time.
Good. Well, excellent stuff. Thank you very much for your time, David.
Thank you, John. And thanks for what you're doing for the space.
Thank you. And thanks to you guys who are watching, listening to the podcast, and you are consuming it. Every episode, we're talking to the people who are building out this crazy, intellectually interesting new way of playing games. As we've discussed, most people in the space have quite strong visions about what they want to do, but it's still sort of quite experimental in terms of how you can do that. And I guess there'll be lots of interesting maneuvers along the way. But please subscribe to find out what's going on, and I'll see you next time. Bye-bye.